Hi everyone, and welcome to the Bold Beautiful Borderline podcast. My name is Lori, and today I am joined by Kelly, who is a nurse who's been in recovery for a very long time, 11 years, I think, and has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder for about 6. So we'll hear about Kelly's story, and the reason that we actually connected is primarily to talk about the impacts of menopause on BPD and our mental health, and so really excited to have Kelly talked to us about this. So Kelly, do you want to introduce yourself and kind of tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, my name is Kelly. Like you said, I've been a nurse for 25 years, been in recovery for, well, I've been in the rooms of 12-step programs since 2000. Finally got into long-term sobriety back on April 15th, 2012. I was given the diagnosis of BPD probably about 6 years ago. I went to my family care physician, you know, basically trying to solve my problems and solve the world's problems now without the use of medication. And I was very open and honest with him. It just seemed like this was the time to which I really needed to get a handle on things. So he referred me to, he told me that I didn't get the diagnosis from him. He told me I had a mood disorder. I have relatives who are schizophrenic. I have relatives who are bipolar. So he just did a generalized mood disorder. He basically said that it could be PMS. It could be a variety of different things which caused my mood to switch. And so he referred me to a counselor. I told him I did not want to take any medication. I could be addicted to anything that's going to change how I feel about myself, I would be all over it.
Good self-advocacy.
Yeah, I had to tell on myself this time. I had to be completely transparent. And that was not my doing. I'm telling you, this was my opportunity to finally get a hold of things. So he referred me to this counselor who is a social worker, who has that type of background, who I know I couldn't persuade in getting anything I wanted. I am an amazing manipulator, so I knew as far as what my boundary would have to be, and I was really impressed by her. I wanted something that was going to help me with tools, some type of tools. You know, I always focused on drugs and alcohol. That's what helped me. But what's funny, because there are some times that I use those meds, use those anything I can get my hands on. Sometimes really, really heavily, and sometimes not so much. Even that was kind of like up and down. I never quite could understand that. But once I started drinking and using, I couldn't stop. So she actually gave me the diagnosis. She had a little test, and I, you know, failed. I wouldn't say failed, but I finally got the diagnosis of borderline personality. I didn't take full advantage of her for a few years. I was in a troubled marriage. And I was kind of using that and using her as far as with the drugs and alcohol portion of my life in regards to her counseling. We always went to DBT. She was a huge advocacy for DBT and little bits and pieces here and there, I think I was more worried about drugs and alcohol and put my mental health aside. I thought that was going to be the cure-all. I thought, you know, 12-step programs were going to help me, and so they didn't. And finally, about 2 years ago, when I decided to end my marriage, and whirlwind of emotions started coming up, we really started to divulge into DBT. You know, I'm awkward. If there's something wrong with me or something that I'm interested in, I go all out. We got the DBT workbook, and I started through that, and I realized I had to put this down because it was the first real knowledge I had about borderline personality disorder. And I was very saddened because just from some of the things I've read, some borderlines really aren't the best people. They get a bad rap. Some counselors don't like to work with people with a diagnosis of DBT. And I found that very depressing. I kept thinking, well, yeah, this is another reason why, you know, my life is the way it is. Yeah. You know, oh, great. So not only am I an alcoholic and I'm an addict, now I have mental health issues that, you know, no one really likes to deal with and no one really knows.
And may I ask a question? What kind of nursing were you in? Like, did you have patients with borderline? Did you have any awareness of what borderline was?
I am a critical care float. So I go to all the ICUs and also the emergency room. We do get a lot of people who have, very rarely do we actually have people who have that diagnosis of BPD, but no one is really on a medication. But we also have people that come in who, yes, I'm bipolar, I have this, but they're not on medication for it. So it's kind of overlooked a lot of times.
And where are you located again? Are you Canada or the States?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I would think in the emergency room, there's like fairly high uses of people with BPD in emergency rooms. But also, I mean, I intentionally don't disclose because of that stigma. So maybe there was just a lack of disclosure.
It very well could be. So the ones that I was seeing in the emergency room were in with like SI. They were in for those types of behaviors. And all we basically do is keep them safe. And we do a disadvantage to them. We are emergency room. We are medical, but when it comes to mental health, we advocate for them to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
But very, very few have I actually seen with that diagnosis.
Interesting. So you were really just on this like self stigma journey is what I kind of call it when you got diagnosed yourself and started looking into resources and realized that the stigma existed.
Correct. It wasn't till like I started, you know, going through this, but then on the flip side, you know, there were parts of it that I'm thinking it was such a relief because it actually described everything that I felt and that I wasn't quote unquote crazy and I wasn't making this up and I wasn't a bad person. And just like being an alcoholic and addict, it had nothing to do with my morals or values. It just happened to be the hand that I was dealt. So I was then excited that I have this and now there's something that I can do about it.
Totally.
So that's when I really started focusing with my counselor. I went in there with my load of books and my papers and, you know, outlines and highlighted areas. And I said, okay, we really need to focus on this. It really was more apparent to me in my relationships. And I never realized that was a thing. And it was true. It was so true. I look back and look at my relationships and how much of having that diagnosis played into it. One day you're fine, next day you're not. You know, next day you're the love of my life. The next time I don't even want to be around you. And I started to reconnect with a guy that we had a past together many, many 30 years ago. And he kind of got himself straight and I got myself straight. So we reconnected. And I wanted to do something right. I wanted to, after this self-discovery, I actually wanted to, you know, make sure I do it right this time, but bring to the table the best person I could possibly be. And that's when I really had to look at myself. So.
And when, out of curiosity, I'm just trying to think timeline-wise, how old were you when you started using?
I was 15 when I started like experimenting with alcohol. By 19, I started using drugs. In my 20s, I got to the point where I was using anything I could get my hands on, and I was also an IV drug user for a period of time.
So I'm just kind of reading between the lines here. It sounds like you maybe hadn't really acknowledged or understood that there were mental health concerns, like probably throughout your life, but
they were always so intertwined with the substance use that it kind of felt like it was the substance use that was causing symptoms.
Yes, they diagnosed me. I went to rehab in the year 2000, and I just wanted to stop using. I was very I was not honest about my use. I was so young. I didn't want to stop. I just wanted to, you know, get okay because my nursing license was on the line. So I needed to skirt around that. They always just went with, back in 2000, depression, anxiety. That was it. Just depression, anxiety.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we'll just fix your depression. We will put you on medication for that. And I was okay with that. But, you know, I thought, oh, well, then the anxiety is something, you know, totally different. They didn't really do much as far as with the diagnosis of BPD, not BPD until I was much, much older.
Interesting. Yeah. And there's, from what I understand, there's a decent amount of substance use in the nursing profession for a variety of reasons as well. So yeah, really interesting that that was kind of the initial motivation to seek some treatment. And then now this like self-discovery process has been really important, just like intrinsically, you know what I mean? I think that's the thing is like, we can't force people to change, but it sounds like you've found this like intrinsic motivation to change now, which is
yeah. Cool. Yeah. I think I finally, towards the end of my marriage, I realized that I didn't need to rely on anyone. You know, I really was able to focus on myself. You know, when I started getting sober, that's when my marriage kind of started to unravel. You know, I was changing. You know, I met him when I was using. I gave up drugs and alcohol just for that particular reason. You know, for him, I just wanted to think this is the way my life's supposed to be. I wasn't choosing sobriety for the right reasons. I was basically dry. So I was given this opportunity. So
did your husband or your partner, did they use substances as well?
No.
Oh, interesting.
He ironically was a blind date, and he was himself a drug and alcohol counselor. The person that set us up did not know that I knew my history or anything along those lines. It was just purely coincidental, but he has never really gotten drunk. He has never smoked a cigarette. He never tried any drugs. So he was very good at his job, but he didn't know what it was like to be an alcoholic or addict. So it wasn't like he was counseling me. He, that was like foreign to him, honestly.
Interesting. So. And how has, so you're recently single? Is that what I'm hearing? Or are you dating now?
Dating.
Okay. And I don't know if you want to tell me how old you are or not, your call, but I know you had mentioned that like menopause is something that you're going through or about to go through. How has that impacted your mental health? Like, it sounds like when you first were talking to your doctor, they had said like, oh, well, your mood swings might be like PMS or other things, which seems like a bit of a cop-out, unfortunately. So I'm glad you ended up getting a diagnosis that resonated more. But yeah, what has that like been like for you?
Hell, I'm not going to lie. It was, with the help of my counselor, I was really utilizing the skills. Like I was kind of desperate a couple of years ago, in trying to find more information about BPD. And, I fell in love with podcasts, and this is how I stumbled upon yours. And the one I listened to was basically with BPD, and yours is basically, you know, people who actually are like me. I've never really talked to anyone like me. So when, you know, this all came about and I'm learning about the stress tolerance and emotional regulation and, you know, doing these, I had flashcards and doing so well. And then probably around October, it was like a change. When I get my symptoms, I feel as though I could be on top of the world. And then I feel like someone puts a coat on me, like a veil on me, and it just changes. Everything about my attitude changes. And that's not happening in October. Sometimes I get in a funk. Sometimes I've realized that I have to, you know, radical acceptance. This is the way it has to be. You know, I see it for what it is. These are the steps that I do. Should I choose them? Sometimes I get a case of the fuck it and be like, nope, I'm just not going to do it. I'm just going to sit.
A case of the fuck it. I love it.
And then move on. But it changed. Like I woke up and I was not in a good mood. And then I just irate. I honest to God, as the days progress, I realize why women kill. I really do. I was so angry, irrational. And I'm like, I've been in bad moods before, but there was no, I always, you know, try to figure out, okay, what is my problem? Am I worried about this? Am I worried about that? You know, what? I had no basis for being so angry and so irritable. You know, I had no idea what was going on, you know, and I talked to my boyfriend. I'm like, I don't feel good. Something's just not right. Something is not right. I'm doing these tools, emotional regulation. I'm exercising and I'm pulling out all the stops. I have flashcards. I have DBT flashcards that
I've never seen those before. Oh, you need to send me a link for those.
Oh, they're Amazon. They're fantastic. There's all these.
I'm going to buy those.
Oh, they're fantastic. And I was going through these damn things and like, okay, mindfulness. Okay, this is what I'm trying to do. Let me get on a podcast. Maybe I have to jump on an AA meeting. Maybe I have to do this. Nothing was working. And I was just so upset. And then the heat flashes started coming on. And then I put two and two together. I'm 49 and I'm feeling every bit 49, maybe a little older. So I panicked. I wasn't ready for this. You know, I kept thinking, you know, I'm finally trying the best I can possibly be. You know, I'm finally getting a handle on myself. I'm, you know, accepting the fact that I have this and I need to put mental health first. And now I feel broken. I feel absolutely broken. So I'm going on the internet like crazy, trying to find out like, you know, what to do, what to take, you know, do I need magnesium? I'll take a bottle of cinnamon. I don't care what it was, but I needed something that was going to help because I knew later on that this is going to be something I had to accept, you know?
Well, and the timing sounds horrible because you finally, like after so many years of struggling, like 2 years ago, you were like, okay, I'm going to be super motivated. I'm going to learn all these skills. I'm going to like really like take my mental health recovery super seriously. And then now the menopause is kicking in and is making it harder to use the skills because it's like a very physical experience that you're going through. Is that
correct?
Fair?
Correct. I would say,
yeah, that's tough.
A lot of my mood just kind of come and go. A lot of it is triggered by a word. I could see something and I'm triggered by that. You know, I knew some of my triggers. Sometimes, you know, my boyfriend would say something and I would feel that, you know, that sinking feeling, I was trying to get out of it. This had no rhyme or reason. This was no trigger whatsoever. This was a feeling. It lasted for, I'd probably about 2 weeks. 2 weeks and I couldn't shake it. And then finally I'm thinking, oh yeah, grandiose nurse who knows everything. I didn't even see it coming. Like I wasn't putting two and two together. I was on birth control pills because I could still get pregnant when we started dating several years ago. So I wasn't getting periods, you know, I was thinking this is fantastic, you know, so I didn't even have that disclaimer. Right. And all of a sudden I would be maybe not so compliant with the birth control pills and have a few in the past, but I wasn't spotting. Like there wasn't any, like anything. And I'm thinking, this isn't good. So I stopped taking them and I never got it. So it was like, yep, welcome. This is how it goes.
Well, and not taking the pill could also impact your hormones, right? Mm-hmm. So like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So that could also, it could all be contributing
together. It was like a perfect storm. Yeah. You know, why not?
Yeah. It's interesting. I just turned 30, so I've got a while to go, but I have an IUD because I have endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to my doctor about it, and she was like, oh yeah, you can actually keep your IUD into menopause because it helps with the symptoms of it. And I was like, yep, I'll take that. I'll do that. So I don't know if that's something that like you're able to add, like do an IUD in menopause or, and it would help. But I mean, certainly if any younger listeners have that option, I would say that's a good one, especially when we're trying to regulate our emotions. We don't need any like additional hits trying to make it harder.
Oh, correct. I figured that part of my, you know, Google research, because, you know, in the medical profession, I Google research myself, and they said about birth control pills can actually help in trying to alleviate some of the problems that you face with menopause. And I'm thinking, I'm never getting off of them. Never, just going to keep rolling. But the ones that I was taking because of my age were like a progesterone. It wasn't like an estrogen base or whatever. So, you know, I'm slowly shriveling and losing estrogen, you know, as we speak. So the type of pills that I was taking weren't the best. I haven't really made any type of call to my GYN yet. I wanted to make sure, you know, but it's inevitable. So
yeah,
I'm not sure what is recommended, but I don't feel as bad now, but it's been a whirlwind for the past October and December, last 3 months.
Wow. Has anything helped that you're finding?
When I finally came to the point of accepting and realizing this is going to be it, that I'm going to have more problems or a little bit more difficulty in regulating myself and not seeing it coming, trying to do just radical acceptance has been huge. And I hated that. And like different things for emotional regulation, I do a lot of problem solving. You know, I try to do pros and cons to, you know, trying to do more of the skills that I was given. So I did research like taking magnesium and different supplements and something along those lines. And that seemed to be doing okay. So for right now, it's okay. I kept thinking worst case scenario, you know, I'll be going to Costco and buying those over-the-counter estrogen things, or I was like, I'll even go with that. But so far, it's been okay.
That's good.
I'm just like in the beginning stages of it, so I'm sure it's going to, you know, precipitate into something larger. But for right now, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, because how long does menopause last? Like quite a while, like years.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So I mean, I'm sure it ebbs and flows as you kind of get used to it and then the symptoms change and that kind of thing. But yeah, I find like supplements are funny because I'm really bad at remembering to take them regularly. And it's always one of those things where it's like, one of my doctors is always like, yeah, it's just like, if you take more of them, you're just peeing more expensive. Like it's not doing, but you know, I'd rather take it and hope for the best. And if it does something, it does something. But yeah, I mean, I know that we have like a decent amount of listeners in your age group. And so I'd be super curious to see if we get any messages around, you know, other people's experience with menopause, because it sounds like you've done so much research. And one of the things that you reached out to us about was like, are there any podcasts about menopause and BPD? And we were like, I don't actually think so. So now there is, because it's you.
Oh yeah, I was scouring mostly, you know, mostly along the lines of I get so overwhelmed with the different tools that are out there that I can do. And I was hoping to say like, oh, well, you know, I'm going through menopause. I use this tool or I use that tool. And I was just trying to, you know, think what other people's experiences were with how they're emotionally labile and what tools they can help. You know, I was kind of grasping, and I was getting, you know, I wouldn't say my sobriety was on the line, but my mental health was just not where it needed to be. And I'd go to work and my mental health was not where it needed to be. So I was scouring. Oh, I was scouring for someone, and there really wasn't a whole lot out there.
Yeah. I guess like in some ways surprised by that. And in other ways, I think women's health issues are so pushed under the rug in general that like, not that, I don't know if menopause counts as like a health issue, but you know what I mean? Like PCOS, endometriosis, like all of these things are so kind of ignored that, and just considered normal that like, maybe it's not super surprising that there's not very many resources that are dedicated to this topic, which is interesting because a lot of, I mean, like a huge proportion of people with BPD are women who most of them will go through menopause at some point. So it's just kind of interesting that like, there's not more out there around how we can support ourselves to go through that like pretty, from what I've heard, like intense physical health change of our bodies and also experience our intense emotions and like manage through them.
Seems in my experience, you know, we're supposed to be dealing with a holistic person when people come in. And it just seems in my experience that doctors want to say, oh, here are your symptoms. Here's a pill for that. Oh, you're having this. Well, there's a pill for that. And all this medicine is pushed to people, you know, to suppress how they're feeling, but not really anything that is really worked on. There's people that come in and like they come in with something that like they have to get the gallbladder out, but yet they have PCOS or they have depression or they have mental health issues. You just don't tell someone that and then leave the room. Like there's so much other things that are incorporated in that the mental health side of everything is just lacking, is completely lacking.
And the connection of our mental health and our physical health and how they are intertwined is hugely important. And is Gabor Mate famous in the States? Do you know who that is?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. I'm on a audiobook kick right now. And I've been like powering through all of his books, and he's a physician from Vancouver, Canada, which is where I'm from. And so he's like majorly famous here, but I wasn't sure if he was famous in the States as well. He talks a lot also about not only the connection between like stress and physical health, but also patriarchy and stress and how that affects our physical health. And so like the assumption that like, you know, well, you're supposed to just be okay as your body goes through this major change, is something that he hasn't talked specifically about menopause in the books that I've read so far, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does, because he's talked a lot about how like autoimmune conditions affect women more than they affect men because of the pressure for us to just like be okay and be the caregivers for everybody in our lives.
Yeah. Understandable. That's very interesting. I mean, I don't, like I said, in our particular area, we don't have psychiatry or psychologists per se in the hospital. We have them come for consults and stuff, but we don't have a psych portion in our hospital. Like we only have area places that do psych, that we only, you know, stabilize them for the most part, treat their quote unquote medical conditions, and then ship them off. We don't have the luxury of having psychologists, you know, and unless you are dealing with it yourself, I seem to have more empathy for some people, you know, and I will go to doctors and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on with her. You know, this is a social aspect of what's going on with her. This is how she is feeling. She doesn't, you know, she's having a hard time, you know, grasping this and understanding it. She's emotionally, you know, not there. And I get we'll talk to the team about that. You know, there's no like, what do you mean talk to the team? Like she's having a problem here. Like, can we get psych involved? But it's very difficult, very difficult.
And this is why people with BPD, substance use issues, and all mental health concerns need to be in medicine, right? Because you're there advocating for these people, whereas others are just kind of like, well, it's not their primary physical diagnosis, so therefore we don't have to deal with it, right?
True.
Yeah. Do people in your profession, like your colleagues, do they know about your mental health or substance use challenges?
Not so much. Not, not so much mental health. Some of my friends have found that, or coworkers have found that, because I'm on Instagram and like I posted like my sobriety coin, or I don't really say anything. I just posted it and said about recovery or anything. There's a fine line between, you know, celebrating it and the anonymity of it. I mean, I can't tell anyone that what I'm in, but I can show them, look, this is what I have. So they found out that way. And there's other times where either I'm having a really bad day, something's going on, that I had asked a coworker to, hey, listen, I have a past, and can you give this med for me? Or I'm having a really hard time right now. Can you please watch my patients? Because this is why, you know, I have a lot of patients that come in with alcohol withdrawal, and some of them we have to actually give alcohol to, depending upon what service they're under. And I had to make sure that, you know, someone is by me so I can give it to them and not be triggering myself. So I've broken my anonymity that way. But as far as mental health, you know, it's kind of like, it's taken very lightly, honestly. You know, these are the same, you know, crew of people that are just like, I'm having a bad day. Oh my God, I need to go to the bar, you know, and they kind of brush things over like, you know, I'm feeling kind of crazy. So I think I'm just going to go home and do whatever. They don't take it as serious as what it should be, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds like an incredibly triggering situation overall, like just from a substance use perspective, ignoring the mental health altogether, like, you know, seeing people who are going through like such intense withdrawals, like alcohol and, you know, I like obviously providing people with alcohol is part of the safety plan, which is important, but then you're having to have your own harm reduction within your profession, and like every day being in situations where there's substances around and stuff, that must be super hard. And then to have coworkers that are like, I'm going to go deal with my problems by going to the bar. Like,
yeah,
you guys, it's 2024 now. Like, let's stop saying stuff like that, because
yeah,
that is a problem. And like, if that's how you're coping with your problems, then like you should reevaluate that, because like there's people all around you that are going to be triggered by statements like that who can't go to the bar and quote unquote like solve their stressful day.
Mm-hmm. There's also the ones that are just like, well, you know, why don't you just come drink with us? Or, you know, how about if you, oh, I bet you're black when you're drunk. And I'm like, actually, I am complete opposite. I am not a black whatsoever.
Yeah, trust me, you do not want me.
Mm-mm, no, not at all. So. But I did have to, you know, my BPD is really entwined with my recovery. You know, I have been known to, depending upon how I was feeling in a 12-hour shift, I could easily go from happy to sad to just, I could cycle through so much in a 12-hour period, and I would act out and I wouldn't do what I was supposed to. But because I have recovery, I have to go and make an amends. So until I was trying to figure everything out with everything, I was making a hell of a lot of men. You know, I was sorry I blew up with you. I'm sorry I called you an ass. You know, so that played quite the role in it when trying to maneuver myself through all these diagnoses.
Was that helpful for you to have to go back and make those amends and like kind of take accountability for your behavior? Or was that more work than it helped?
I got to the point where I was so desperate to stay sober that I was willing to do anything. And, you know, when I got sober, I also got back a conscience, one of the blessings of recovery. And, I couldn't sit well with it. Like I had to, like I physically needed to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Sarah, who I'm sure you've heard on the podcast many times, has a history with substance use as well, and a lot of our listeners do, and such a wide range of available options for people who use substances, and like AA works for so many people and it's so accessible, which is the beauty of it, I think. But then there's others who like really can't do AA, just can't it just doesn't work. So I'm glad that you found what works for you.
Oh, so am I. So am I.
Mm-hmm. Because it's been how many years? 11?
Yeah, 11.
Wow. And so do you still go to meetings and everything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Both my boyfriend and I attend meetings. And, you know, he's been a fantastic recovery person for me. He has his own program. I have mine. But, you know, it's nice that we know what we're coming from. And God love him. You know, when I told him, you know, hey, listen, I have BPD and this is what this means. I swear to God, I think he did research on it because he has been such a advocate to me. He knows if I'm having a mood. He knows how to work around me. He knows that what I'm saying isn't 100% fact. That when I go off on a tangent and I say, this is not working, we need to break up. I'm like, I'll talk to you tomorrow. You know, I know you're having.
Yes.
And I feel bad, you know, kind of thinking no one should go through that. And he's just like, it's you, you know, it makes you, you. So I wouldn't change it. You're growing, you're learning to do this. And, you know, when I told him I was doing this, I was like, what, me and my crazy ideas, what am I doing? So he was quite the advocate for that as well.
Oh, that's so awesome. We're partners that aren't judging us for our emotions and are just there and understand that, like, sometimes we just need a moment. Like, the whole I'll talk to you tomorrow thing is so important to hear, because by tomorrow, 99% of the time, we're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Well, he said about, he would never, he accepts me because I might have those times where I'm irrational or something, like, he goes, but when I love very hard and I'm emotional, and he loves that part of me. He loves the fact that I'm so emotional. I get so excited, you know, and which is, you know, part of me, you know, I don't do anything half-assed. It's all or nothing. And, you know, he loves that, but he also knows that when I have bad times, I'm going to have some bad times.
So that's what he loves about your borderline and you. I always like to end my episodes with a question about what are your favorite things about borderline?
That I love the fact that I get highly excitable, that I, when I'm happy, I feel happy. You know, I have such strong emotions about something, and I love that. I love that I feel that way. I don't want to change that. I like being the way I am. Maybe that's just, I'm sure there's other things that I find great about it. You know, I've looked at it more of it as a blessing than a curse. I've looked at being an alcoholic and an addict a bonus, a positive about me, because if it wasn't for these things, I would not have taken action to be the best I can possibly be. You know, I don't mind. I've accepted BPD, and that's okay. It really is okay.
I love that. That's amazing. Those are my favorite parts of BPD too, is the excitableness. it's like fun and childlike a lot of the time to just be like so easily excited. Are there any other things that you wanted to chat about before we wrap up for the day?
I think I've been through everything. I don't know.
No, I feel like this has been super excellent. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the audience's perspective on the menopause piece. Because maybe there's some super amazing skills that, like, we just haven't thought of that can really help with that transition.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm getting a heat flash now, so.
Perfect timing.
Way to end it.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kelly. It was so nice to meet you. And
likewise.
Yeah, best of luck on your journey. I'm so glad you reached out.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity.
Anytime.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.